I was wondering while I was sitting there whether it actually fit between the screen and that, but I did. It's amazing. Happy Sabbath. It's good to see you all. Well, thank you, Randy, for your message. I know we had talked briefly before church, and it was a struggle for me getting this together, but that works perfectly with my sermon, which is probably the reason why it was a struggle for both of us, because we were both working at the same time. I was waiting on you, and you were waiting on me. It's like God's like, wow, would Jason get his act together? Anyway, the title of today's sermon is, What is the Mark of the Beast? Say, how in the world does that deal anything with Randy's sermonette? Randy mentioned Christ living in us, and then he had mentioned Ephesians 2, a life of good deeds. And I want you to remember that part of his sermonette as I give the sermon today, because I think it'll be a very important key to what we're talking about. So last Sabbath, I was talking to Robert Curry and Audrey Griffith before services. We briefly discussed the mark of the beast and what it could be, an actual mark or something symbolic. How many of you have had this very same conversation with friends, family, church members, right? I've had this very same thought as a child, even like, well, what is this mark of the beast? What is that all about? I remember as a kid, I thought, well, there'll be a 666 on someone's forehead tattooed right there, like that. Or maybe in the palm of the right hand. I mean, that's all the farther I was able to think on that. I mean, that I was a kid. I'm like, I didn't know what that beast was, but I was contemplating it. We all gave our opinions that day when I was talking to Mr. Curry about what we thought this mark would be. But it continued to burn in my thoughts that day, and I started writing thoughts on the sermon while Tim, unfortunately, was giving the sermon. But I was flipping back and forth, so I was like writing notes down on what he was saying, and then I was flipping back 3 or 4 pages, and I was writing some stuff down. It was just kind of bubbling over, and then it just dissipated as I was talking to Randy today and until recently this week and late last night. And then it all came forward. So now in this message, there's just my thoughts. They're what I believed were inspired by God to discuss today. This message is not doctrine or meant to be the ABCs of the end time, but merely a jumping point for discussion among us, a point of meditation for later. Use the sermon message here to build each other up, like Ecclesiastes 4, 9, 11 says. After this message, talk with each other. Go back to asking those questions about, well, what do you think the beast's power is? What do you think that mark is going to be like? Because together we make ourselves stronger. It was unfortunately you didn't get to hear, but the sermon also in Colorado Springs, it was about friendship. It was about building bonds and Christian relationships with each other, that we are stronger together than we are apart. And as we get closer to the end times, we're going to need that. We're going to need that bond, that strength that we gather from each other. So I'm hopeful that this message will inspire you to meditate and think about and pray and ask about it and talk to fellow people of God about it so that we could find out more. So the purpose of my message, like I said, I want us to discuss this but also I want to learn more about the mark of the beast and its entirety so that we can be better prepared for the future events that are coming. So when I look at the mark of the beast, I wanted to kind of get an idea of what the populace of the world, what did everyone else think it was? What did it represent? What are people saying about the mark of the beast? And we live in a very interesting time period, which is very easy to find information, to find knowledge. There's Google, there's Yahoo, there's Bing. And so I Googled, what is the mark of the beast? Just to find out. The search results came back 172 million different hits. Or topics, or areas I could look at. That's a lot. Some of the topic feeds came back linking the sign of the beast to COVID-19 or to the vaccine. Some to microchips being placed under our skin, perhaps in the palm of our hand or somewhere else on our body. barcodes emblazoned on our forearms or maybe smack in the middle of the forehead, right? How many of you have ever sent their DNA into some sort of place that would tell you who your ancestors are? Anyone? Okay, I had about the same amount in Colorado. Who knows what they're doing with your DNA, right? They could be storing that up. Some government could take over. I mean, for crying out loud, they seem to be jumping all over all of our rights all over the place. So why isn't that a possibility? There are also things about tattoos. There are things, conspiracy theory one after the other. And I'm not saying any one of them are right or wrong. I'm just saying there are a lot of talk. There's a lot of things out there about it and a lot of fog or not clear items. But one thing I found interesting was on a website called The Catholic Answers, entitled The Mark of the Beast by Father Charles Grondin. Now, why, you may ask, why would I be looking at a Catholic website for religious answers of any type? Some of you may have been thinking that in the back of your heads. I like to understand what the future beast power's religious arm is thinking and teaching. And that is why I did it. I wanted to look and see, what are they saying about this? Why? What's important? So this is the web article, and what they said is they had someone who followed their website, and he had written in a question to the gentleman. He said, what is the mark of the beast? So many people said that once you receive it, your name will be erased from the book of life. But isn't God's mercy and love greater than that? That was his question. And then the religious figure who was in charge of answering answered this way, and he started off with a book and verse in Revelation. He wrote, "The beast forced all the people, small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to be given a stamped image on their right hands or their foreheads, so that no one could buy or sell except one who had been stamped the image of the beast's name or the number that stood for its name. Wisdom is needed here. One who understands can calculate the number of the beast, for it is a number that stands for a person. This number is 666. And that was from Revelation chapter 13, verse 16 through 18. The writer now continues with his opinion on this matter, not just the Bible verse. He says, "The book of Revelation makes great use of symbolic imagery and theological themes. It used the events contemptuously, I can't even say that word, to its composition to deliver a message about the ultimate triumph of Christ." You could tell I use some of those big words all the time. "The beast symbolizes the various Roman empires who persecuted the early Christians, but mainly is a symbol of Caesar Nero, whose name in Hebrew has a number value of 666. The so-called mark of the beast is presumed to be, by most scholars, to allude to the coins on the Roman Empire that bore the image of this empire." And then he continues. "The book of Revelation states quite clearly that this mark was forced upon the people." There's no mention of it being voluntary. In other words, they had no choice. They couldn't do anything about it. They were forced to have this mark on them. The only thing Revelation mentions regarding the book of life and the beast is that those who chose to worship the beast do not have their names in the book of life. However, this is quite distinct from the forced mark of the beast. So that was the father's answer to what the website follower's question was. And what do you think about that? Do you think that's kind of misleading, maybe? Maybe. Seems to put a lot of emphasis on a past aspect of the beast, dealing with Rome, which obviously that is a part of it, but doesn't seem to really be focusing at all on that there is a future coming. It makes it seem as if, well, it was forced, the mark is forced, it was not voluntary, so maybe to him he's almost downplaying that. To me, it makes it seem like that. Has anyone else kind of felt the same way when they're listening to that? I would feel pretty bad if that was how we were taught this, that we didn't know the truth. This is purposely deceiving the individuals. They would be very unarmed and unprepared for when it came. The future religious arm is dismissing the importance of the legitimacy of the beast and the mark in the future as well as being misleading. If this was our answer today, I would not really know what was going on. I know that it's hard to imagine. So what does the Bible say about the mark and the worship of the beast? If you please turn to Revelation chapter 13 with me. Revelation chapter 13. We'll find out a little bit more about what the Bible says about the beast, where it gets its power, and what the Bible says is all about this mark that we're going to have, or that they're going to have. We'll start in verse 1. And I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 diadems on its horns and blasphemous actions or blasphemies names on its head. Now, we sing about diadems in a song, but I highly doubt any of us ever use that word ever in our lives, right? Just every once in a while we use the word diadems. Jeweled crowns are on his horns. Blasphemous is disrespectful actions or words to God. And these things are what pictures this beast coming up. This reference to being written on its head or on its face reminds me of a couple scriptures. And if you would turn and then at the same time keep a spot here in Revelation 13 to Exodus. Exodus, please. Chapter 13, verse 9. Exodus 13, verse 9. And that shall be to you as a sign on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the law of the Lord may be in your mouth. For with a strong hand the Lord has brought you out of Egypt. We're very familiar with that verse. It was brought up during the days of unleavened bread. We understand its meaning. That we're talking about a sign on your hand, that we're not literally talking about a tattoo or a mark on the hand. When we're talking about as a memorial between your eyes, we're not talking about a stamp on your forehead. We're talking about a way of life, our actions being our hands, and in between our front lengths of our eyes being our thoughts, that we live a certain life, as Randy had said, living a life of Christ. And then in Deuteronomy 6:8, where it speaks metaphorically again, just like those verses, not to actually having a sign on your hand, but refers to actions here. I believe it is a referring to the beast's desire, and actions will be what the beast is all about. His one goal is to blaspheme and defile God. You will know him by his actions. And then if we go back to Revelation, I ask you to keep your finger or some sort of marker at Revelation chapter 13. I'm going to head right back there again. And now we're on verse 2. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard. Its feet were like bears, and its mouth was like lion's mouth. And to it the dragon gave the power and his throne and great authority. You'll find a parallel verse or set of scriptures or passages to this in Daniel 7. In Daniel 7, and it reads as such. Daniel 7, verse 2. Daniel declared, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four great beasts came up out of the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Then as I looked, its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And the mind of the man was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second one, like a bear. It was raised up on one side. It had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And it was told, Arise, devour much flesh. After this I looked, and behold, another like a leopard, with 4 wings of a bird on its back, and the beast had 4 heads, and dominion was given over it. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a 4th beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth, It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from all the other beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. And then you'll also find in Matthew 4, verses 8 through 9, this is the section talking about Christ being not challenged, but tested by Satan. And this section here, it talks about Satan says, well, if you would just bow down to me, all this that you see will be yours. He had the authority to give that to Christ at the time. And so this beast has the authority to give these things. And that's what I'm talking about here. Let's continue back in Revelation chapter 13, if we would. And I apologize for us jumping back and forth. Revelation chapter 13, verse 3. One of its heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed, and the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast. And they worshiped the dragon, for he had been given his authority, for he had given his authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast, and who can fight against it? The whole world marveled at the beast as they followed it. Has there been one all-powerful government so far that the whole world marveled at? I mean, we've had large government sections or kingdoms in areas, but not one that the whole world marveled over. Can you think of any countries that have been reduced to rubble and have now roared back to an economic powerhouse? Probably think of Germany. This passage to me just 4 years ago would have seemed unimaginable. Mankind worshiping the dragon, mankind worshiping really anything in this time period, seems unfathomable to me. Now, after all the dramatic changes that have occurred, this does seem a little bit more possible or very much doable here soon. In verse 5, and the beast was given a mouth uttering haughty and blasphemous words. The words haughty, proud, and blasphemous, disrespectful to God are important to remember. I believe these descriptive words are important clues to what the mark of the beast truly is all about. And if we continue on reading, and it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. I think the interesting part here, or the part to remember, especially as things get more and more difficult, is allowed to exercise. Just remember who is ultimately in charge. No matter how hard things get, no matter how frightful it becomes, God is and has always been in charge. And we should take great solace in that, great comfort in that. No matter how fearful we may become, God is in charge. God has planned this out since the beginning of time. In verse 6, it opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling, that is, those who dwell in heaven. 7, also it was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them. It's frightening to think about, but it's written. It's going to happen. Be prepared. And authority was given it over every tribe and people and language and nation, and all who dwell on earth will worship it. And then here's a very important thing that I've always read over when I read this part and didn't quite get until recently. There's a comma here. And then after that comma, it says, everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world and the book of life of the Lamb who was slain. I always used to get so depressed about this part. I'd always read this, and all who dwell on earth will worship the beast, everyone whose name is not. And I looked at it as everyone worshiped. Everyone worshiped the beast. How sad. How horrifying is that? But this comma, is saying everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world in the book of the life who was slain. I don't believe this verse is saying the whole world will worship the beast, like I used to think, only that at the end time, who were not written in the book of life since the foundation of the world will be worshiping the beast. I find this encouraging and sad, still today. It is encouraging because it isn't the whole world submitting to the beast, and sad because some were predestined in a way since their birth at a time to relinquish their inheritance to a lie. There's still hope for those who are in the beast, the harlot. If you turn to Revelation chapter 18, Revelation chapter 18, verse 4. And an angel or a voice here is being spoken. Then I heard another voice from heaven saying, "Come out of her, my people, lest you take part in her sins, lest you share in her plagues." This passage is referring to those who were under the sway of Babylon or are still in this city or this environment. Come out. You have an option. It's not a stamp guarantee that you're there. You have an ability to move yourself. You're being given the option to remove yourself. And I think that's very important. The people remember that they have that option. Here's also where the Catholic website says, or a Catholic website I mentioned in the beginning says, the only thing that Revelation mentions regarding the Book of Life and the beast is that those who chose to worship the beast do not have their names in the Book of Life. As we keep reading, we'll find out this is not entirely true. Now let's go back to chapter 13, staying in Revelation. Chapter 13, we're going to be in verse 9. And it says, "If anyone has an ear, let him hear." In the prayer, in the beginning, it mentioned having an ear. And we need to go to God for wisdom, and we need to listen. We need to listen to what God tells us. So at this point, we see a government that is marveled by the population of the earth, and a powerful government that will arise, who gets its authority from Satan the dragon. We will know it, that government, by its actions. It will be hostile and rebellious to God, and will despise and destroy true believers and followers of Christ. It will do blasphemous things. You will see it. We continue on to verse 10 of chapter 13. If anyone is to be taken captive, to captivity he goes. If anyone is to be slain with the sword must he be slain. Here is a call for the endurance and faith of the saints. Here, verse 10 is warning that it will happen and you must endure. If you are alive at this time, you will have this to deal with. You are not to submit to this power, unlike what the Catholic website seemed to imply. Well, it was forced on you. It's not voluntary. I think it's important that we remember, though, we are to submit to our rulers in all things until it goes against God's way. Then we are to stand firm. And let's continue reading now in verse 11. Then I saw another beast rising out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb, and it spoke like a dragon. A lamb who speaks like a dragon. A religious figure, the false Christ, whose power is from Satan. This is a horrifying combination of religion, who has the power of a strong military, and under direct control of the ultimate evil and depravity that is Satan. We look at the world that we're in today, and it's already pretty sad, it's pretty scary, it's pretty frightening and horrifying what people are capable of doing to each other. We see reports on the news, the newspaper, or online, or if we watch TV. We see movies with graphic depictions of death and dismemberment. We see what people are doing on the southern border of dropping children even over the fence. Can you imagine when Satan is actually let loose to a degree, how bad humanity will become, what it will look like? In verse 13, it performs great signs, even making fire come down from heaven to earth in front of people. And by signs that it is allowed to work in the presence of the beast, it deceives those who dwell on earth, telling them to make an image for the beast that was wounded by the sword and yet lived. And it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast might even speak and might cause those who would not worship the image of the beast to be slain. This is similar to how the cults of the old deceived their believers into thinking their gods of stone, metal, and gold could speak. And in my archaeological Bible, EVS, it actually has a little commentary section down here, which I'm going to read. A speaking statue was not an unknown phenomenon in the Greco-Roman world. The rhetorician Lucian mentioned that a serpent representing Glaucon Asclepius was built with a movable mouth and concealed speaking tubes in Pergamum's Red Hall, believed to be a temple of Isis. The cult statue of the goddess stood over a hollow base through which a priest could enter and make the god speak. Now, what we're talking about here seems to be a supernatural one versus some sort of stringed puppet to some degree. This is worse than probably anyone's nightmare. As a simple mortal man, this verse is hard for me to wrap my mind around to see something like this happen. I mean, this could be talking about some sort of technology, but perhaps it's not. I don't know. And I'm a creative individual, but I'd have a hard time imagining this statue or this image or whatever it might be speaking or having some sort of ability to talk. And then in verse 15, also, it causes or requires or forces all, both small and great, both rich and poor, both free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead. The right hand is usually a symbol of power, the right hand of God, for example, or action, as we had stated before, with a marked on our hands that we have action, while the forehead is generally reserved for thought. It's the first thing on my mind, or it's in front of my head. This is where many would say, it must be a chip when we're talking about the mark of the beast, or maybe it's a credit card, or an account number to a virtual, some sort of virtual currency or account somewhere where we could buy and pay with that. Or maybe it's a barcode to record one's allegiance. But I'm not so sure if it's that. Continue reading verse 17. So that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark, that is, the name of the beast or its number of its name. This calls for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of the man, and his number is 666. Where do we receive our knowledge and wisdom? Proverbs 2, verse 6. If you turn there, Proverbs 2, verse 6 says, all wisdom comes from the Lord, and so do the common sense and understanding. We must seek God here for clarity and understanding. We cannot passively read the Bible. We can't sit back and just let it happen. But we must aggressively seek God. To seek God is an action again. It's not just sitting there. It's just not waiting for some little bird to come up and twitter in my ear and give me a message. But we must seek God for wisdom to answer what has not been answered. Now, if you would turn to chapter 14 of Revelation, we're going to start in verse 9. And another angel, if a third, followed them, saying with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast and its image and receives a mark on his forehead or his hand, he also will drink the wine of God's wrath, poured full strength into the cup of his anger, and he will be tormented with fire and sulfur in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of the torment goes up forever and ever. And they have no rest, day or night, these worshipers of the beast and its image, and whoever receives the mark of its name. Verse 12, here is a call for the endurance of the saints, those who keep the commandments of God and their faith in Jesus. This verse, as you'll remember by reading it, is very similar to chapter 13, verse 10. It's almost virtually written the same. The beast power is a three-pronged force of military might, economic dominance, and a vicious pagan theocracy. It is abundantly clear at this point we do not want to have the mark of the beast, nor worship it. But what is important behind the mark, and what is it? Are there other scriptures similar to this one where it mentions the hand or hands or forehead? Let's look to see how these other verses help us better understand whether or not the mark is indeed some sort of physical mark, or is it a metaphor for something, or perhaps it's a combination of both. So I believe there is a strong case to be made that the mark of the beast is a metaphor of one's actions and behaviors. During the Unleavened Bread days, we turn to this book, so please turn there again and in the beginning of this sermon to Exodus 13 again. Exodus chapter 13. Verse 9, we're actually going to start in verse 8 for some context. You shall tell your son on the day, it is because of what the Lord did for me when I came out of Egypt, and it shall be to you as a sign on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the law of the Lord may be in your mouth, for with the strong hand the Lord has brought you out of Egypt. Does God intend for us to have a mark on our hands? Is this what this verse is saying? Or some sort of stamp between our eyes? What is he saying? Do I literally have the law on my tongue? I don't think so. He is saying here, he's wanting us to have it part of us, part of our life, right? Now turn to Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 13 through 18. Deuteronomy 11. I'm going to paraphrase just the first beginning parts of that chapter, verse 11 through 17. God is talking about many blessings he would provide for Israel if they would obey and do not worship the pagan gods. He would talk about his ensuing God's wrath if they did. And then in verse 18, he states the following: you shall therefore lay up these words of mine in your heart and in your soul, and you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. Are we actually binding anything to our hands? And then let me read to you Hebrews chapter 8, verse 10. Hebrews 8, 10, you don't have to turn there. For this is a covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, declares the Lord. I will put my laws into their minds and write them on their hearts. And I will be their God, and they shall be my people. We can go for more examples. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 7 through 9. You don't turn there either, but Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 7 through 9. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. And you shall write them on your doorposts of your house and on your gates. What this is saying is, so when you leave your home, you're thinking of me. When you leave my property and when you come back, the place that you own, you're thinking of me. When you perform things outside with your hands, your actions, you are thinking of me. And when you're out and about, as David said, I meditate on you day and night. Your thoughts of your head is what it is talking about here, not an actual stamp on your forehead or something wrapped around your hand, even though the Jewish people did create something to put over their head, as most human beings do. If it's something they can't see, they create something they can see. We are to live the life of Christ, as Randy had said there. That's what it's talking about. Let's turn back to Revelation chapter 9, please. Revelation chapter 9, verse 2 through 4. He opened the shaft of the bottomless pit, and from the shaft rose smoke like the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened with the smoke from that shaft. Then from the smoke came locusts on the earth, and they were given power like the power of scorpions of the earth. three things come to mind here, two of which I thought of, and then Sean reminded me this morning, Sean Boer back in Colorado. But can you imagine if we took this scripture just literally on face value? Can you, you know what locusts, when they come in, they're like this big dark cloud and there's millions of them. Can you imagine locusts that have the ability to sting you like a scorpion? And if not that, is it some sort of military force? Or as Sean reminded me, or some sort of biochemical warfare, some sort of fog or smoke that comes down. And continue reading verse 4, it says, they were told not to harm grass of the earth or any green plant or any tree. So it's designed just to kill human beings, perhaps. But only those people who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. Maybe look at the person next to you, see if anyone has a seal. Do any of us have one on our head? And we could definitely tell with Brian because he's super bald. So you could tell if he had some sort of seal, but he doesn't. I'm sorry. And then Revelation chapter 22. Verse 3 through 5. No longer will there be anything accursed, but the throne of God and of the Lamb will be in it, and his servants will worship him. They will see his face. I'm just going to stop right there. That's a wow moment. Can you imagine what that's going to be like? When I drive down to Monument from Parker, it seems like everywhere I drive is a wow moment for me. I get to see the fingerprints or the footprints of God when I look out at evergreen trees or the open plains or those wonderful mountains and the blue skies. I think, wow. I remember thinking of this time I was talking to a friend of mine, one of my cords from back in Illinois. And I said, I can't imagine what it'd be like to be in front of God. And I thought, because I'm kind of an emotional, sappy person, that I'd fall on my face and weep. That's me. I'm very emotional. My friend, who was father of one of my friends growing up in YLU, was an ex-military man, a Marine. That definitely wasn't his option. His was, I'm going to stand and salute. And then I'm going to ask, what are your next orders, sir? It's two different ways of looking at it. I don't know which is right and which is wrong. But I can't wait. If we continue reading on in verse 4, they will see his face and his name will be on their foreheads. And night will be no more. They will need no light of lamp or sun, for the Lord will be their light, and they will reign forever and ever. Are any of these verses speaking of an actual tattoo, barcode, physical mark of any kind? Anything written on one's heart, hands, or forehead? They are not. These verses are talking about taking something, God's law, God's way, living Christ's example of giving in all aspects of our life, coming or going in our home, coming or leaving or going in our property, giving our time or blood or helping others or a smile. It's a way of life is what it's talking about. It's talking about how we should be, not that we should have some sort of mark on us. We are to talk the talk and walk the walk when it comes to being a follower of Christ. It is not just a trendy thing to be applied to one's bumper. Do you know God or do you know Jesus? But it's a way of life. It's not a Facebook meme that you pass on or else God won't love you. It's a way of life. So why is this important? This is important because I believe it shows us that the mark of the beast perhaps isn't a tattoo to be searching for, a chip, a microchip, a barcode, an armband, some sort of item injected into you through the virus but a way of life. What is the mark of the beast? It is perhaps a way of life that is contrary to God's way in all aspects. The mark is living proudly contrary to God's way in all things. Gay pride, using and taking the symbol of the rainbow and putting it together with being proud that you're defiant of God. The beast, the mark of that beast, is a defiant, rebellious, blasphemous creature, entity, government, way of life. To better understand the mark or characteristics of the beast, let's look through the Bible. And we already spoke about Revelation chapter 13, verse 5, but we're just going to look at it briefly again. Revelation chapter 13, verse 5 speaks of the beast's power being haughty and blasphemous, proud, and being disrespectful to God in all ways. That's his goal. Revelation 14, verse 8. The second angel followed and said, "The great city of Babylon has fallen. This is a city that made all nations drunk and immoral." Now God is angry and Babylon has fallen drunk. When people get drunk, they lose their inhibitions. They lose their abilities. They do things that they say they would never do if they hadn't drank that one last thing, a beer, or that one last shot. They lose control sometimes of their bodily functions. They can't stand or can't walk, but they may say or do things that normally they wouldn't do. And this isn't talking about really being drunk, although it probably has something to do with the people at the time. But it's talking about anything that would have held man back at this time where they wouldn't have done X, Y, or Z. They wouldn't have committed that fornication. They wouldn't have hurt their neighbor. They wouldn't have gone out there and been cold to someone. Now they are drunken. They are drunken on this immorality and this power of Babylon. And they're doing things that you will see that will disgust you. Even though we could look out today and say there are many things that disgust us now, it's going to get worse. And that's one of the things you'll see. It'll be immoral. Further in Revelation chapter 17, verse 5. It describes the great Babylon as the mother of every immoral and filthy thing on the earth. We look around today, we see a lot of filthy and immoral stuff, but nothing will compare to the way of life of the beast power coming soon. Coming soon attraction. Nothing will compare to that. She is the mother of immoral and filthy things on earth. Lastly, in chapter 18, the nail in the coffin is labeled against the beast with this laundry list of sinful acts. Chapter 18 of Revelation, starting in verse 2. The angel shouted, "Fallen, powerful Babylon has fallen. It is now the home of demons. It is the den of every filthy spirit and of all unclean birds and every dirty and hatred animal. Babylon's evil and immoral wine has made all nations drunk. Every king on earth has slept with her, and every merchant on earth is rich because of her evil desires." This passage is rich, to say it again, rich with visual imagery. I think it really helps us see how far man has fallen. I mean, we see today with big tech and big companies getting together with a certain political ideology and they take people off the internet or they help them lose their jobs. We have governments threatening to take power from businesses if they don't shut their doors as they have required, all for the greater good. It's not too hard to imagine this verse, because we're seeing baby steps with it today that seem huge to us now, because they are, but it's going to get much worse. Brethren, we do not have the luxury of a lazy, non-inquisitive mind. So let's not ignore the wisdom of God's words and seek his wisdom in this matter. Open your minds and listen to God. Truly listen I want to look at examples in the Bible where God specifically took direct action when presented with what God saw as intolerable evils, and then compare that or contrast that to where I think the beast is. I think through these incidents or actions on God's part, it will shed even more light on understanding the characteristics of the mark of the beast. We only need to look at the first book of the Bible to find our first examples. As Herbert W. Armstrong would continually do, he would go back to Genesis and right back to the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And he drew out so many important things from that over and over again. And as a child, I was amazed. I'm like, we're talking about what again with this? I'm like, how is that even possible? But there's so much in the very beginning of our book that we can glean from. Although we won't be talking about the tree, we are going to go back to the very beginning of us. In chapter 3, verses 1 through 6, Genesis 3, 1 through 6. We're not going to read this line for line or word for word, but we know what happened here. Eve was, quote unquote, tempted by Satan. And Adam standing right beside her. Eve sought wisdom, but not just any wisdom. She sought after the wisdom to be like God. She coveted to be like God. Because Satan said in here, hey, you know, the reason why God doesn't want you to eat that, one of his reasons is, then you'll be just like him. You'll have understanding just like him. You'll have his wisdom, basically, his knowledge. She coveted to be like God. At the end of verse 5, her intent was evil. After this event, God banished Adam and Eve from the Garden of Eden. In chapter 6 of Genesis, verses 11 through 12, and verse 5, we're talking about the corruption of the world with the coming flood to cleanse it with Noah. The earth was full of violence, and the thoughts of the hearts of man continually were evil. There might be some correlation to the end time here. Actually, there is. And you'll see it mentioned later in the Bible about how people will be just like in Noah's day, marrying and giving and marrying, and then next thing you know, the end will happen. Genesis 6:5, God saw the wickedness of all man's thoughts. Those who have ears, let them hear. Then there's Nimrod and the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11:4. Tower to the heavens, this really tall tower. Their intent was to be greater than God. They wished to be free or to free themselves by making themselves on equal ground or above God, to show themselves how great they are. We too are in the heavens, they would probably say. We are great without you, God. Babel's evil was their thoughts that directed their actions. What was in the forefront of their head? Their thoughts were proud and haughty, just as Sodom. If you'll turn to Ezekiel chapter 16. We actually turned to this last Sabbath in Tim's sermon, 16:49. Ezekiel 16:49. They, speaking of Sodom, were arrogant and spoiled. They had everything they needed and still refused to help the poor and the needy. It was their actions. All of the characteristics mentioned are opposite of God's character that we are to emulate. As Randy had said, turn with me to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, please. We're going to look at verse 3 through 11, and we're all very familiar with this section of the Beatitudes. God blesses those who depend on him. God blesses those who depend on him. Did it sound like Eve fit that? When she was wanting to partake of that fruit? Did it sound like the men and women of Noah's time were depending on God? Did Nimrod, Did he depend on God, or was he a strong hunter and dependent on himself? If we continue reading, they belong to the kingdom of heaven, those who depend on him or depend on God. This is where our home is. Not here, not now. It matters not who's our governor or who's our president. Our home, our future home, is the kingdom of heaven. God blesses those people who grieve. They will find comfort. God blesses those who are humble. We should be humble because we understand all power comes from God. Again, as you had mentioned, it's not because of anything that we did that we're sitting here today. It's because of God. We get down on our knees every morning and every night because we are remembering where all power comes from, where the mercy and the grace of our very existence comes from. God blesses those who are humble. The earth will belong to them. God blesses those people who want to obey him more than to eat or drink. They will be given what they want. God blesses those people who are merciful. They will be treated with mercy. God blesses those people whose hearts are pure. They will see him. God blesses those people who make peace. They will be called his children. God blesses those people who are treated badly for doing right. They belong to the kingdom of heaven. God will bless you when people insult you, mistreat you, and tell all kinds of evil lies about you because of me. In the end, this theocracy will have great power over all mankind in a way they think, worship, and buy goods. We see the seeds being planted today with big tech and big companies merging with political ideologies to banish, like I said, viewpoints and people they disagree with. We see government in our country trampling our liberties all for the greater good. And many don't see anything wrong with it. Is it really a stretch to see an all-powerful government able to monitor everything we do through our smart devices? Those smart devices that are in our homes, perhaps, that control the temperature? Or the one we call Siri or Alexa, right? Alexi or Alexa. Google this, Google that. That are in our cars, watches, and phones. They will not need to have a physical mark on our hands or foreheads, but will know who is who by the days we worship and the actions we hold dear. If we are living a Matthew 5 life of the Beatitudes, life will scream, our lives will scream at the mountaintops a different way than the beast's way. We will be shining brightly compared to the folks around us. It'll be very easy to tell who we are. There doesn't need to be a mark for us on our foreheads. In the future, if we do not work on the Sabbath, they will know. In the future, if we do not celebrate Easter or Christmas, they will know. They will know if we go to keep the Feast of Tabernacles as well. Our marks or seals will be very visible and in stark contrast to those around us who live by Satan's laws, the law of the mark of the beast. Matthew 5, verses 14 through 15 states, "You are like light for the whole world. A city built on top of a hill cannot be hidden. And no one would light a lamp and put it under a clay pot. A lamp is placed on a lampstand where it can give light to everyone in the house. And we must shine, brethren. We have no option. That is who we are. That's what we're supposed to do. And that light shining is a direct difference or in contrast to the darkness that'll be surrounding us, like that thick cloud of locusts coming up from that pit. This message, like I said, started as a quick impromptu conversation before Sabbath services with two of God's people, two of my cords. I believe the most important thing about the mark of the beast isn't the mark. The most important things to know are the actions of those who would impose the mark. We aren't to be looking for credit cards or chips, vaccines, or Alexa in our homes, but a government joined with big business and a false Christ requiring allegiance to them exclusively instead of the great Almighty God. It is the deeds we need to be looking for, not the mark, although there may indeed be a physical mark of some type someday. We cannot allow ourselves to be fooled into believing that this snake oil salesman is selling what it is selling. But look at their fruits. It's always the fruits. Show me your faith through your works, James, right? I hope this message has stirred up your Holy Spirit, inspires you to converse, meditate, and pray to God. God is great. God is wise and the source of all wisdom, power, and mercy. Go to God and ask for his inspiration and wisdom in this matter so that we may learn more. And as we talk together, as you pray about it, as you study about it, and then you start talking to your neighbor about it, and you start adding it together, God speaks to us. And he can tell us everything that we want to know about anything that's in this book, but we must seek him and ask. God has planned for this moment in time since before time began. Have faith and confidence that God is indeed in control. We are so blessed to be part of his plan and be able to glorify and love our Father in Jesus Christ. God wants us to seek him. So seek him in this matter and listen. Listen to what wisdom God reveals to you all. Be still and listen.